Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Blake Bedingfield, who joins us each week, presented by Ramjack of Middle Tennessee. If you think your home might have a foundation problem, don't make things worse by putting it off. Your house is your most valuable investment. Call Ramjack at 615-726-1504, 726-1504, or visit ramjackmiddletennessee.com. Blake normally joins us on Tuesday. Rearranged a bit this week for travel purposes. Parts unknown is what we'll say he was, and he joins us in studio now. What's up, Blake?
I'm happy to be here on a Thursday.
Yeah, man. Great to have you here. Paul's back from the locker room. Any headlines there, Paul, before we get going with Blake?
Nothing major, I don't think. I will sort through my notes here and hit you with whatever jumps to
all
mind.
All right, well, let's start with the headline of the week. Ryan Tannehill is the quarterback for the Tennessee Titans in Week 7 against the Chargers. When they made the move in the third quarter, you thought what?
You know, I thought at that point the offense was not really having a good day at all. They were struggling moving the ball, whether it was on the ground or in the air. You know, a shot in the arm with changing the quarterback at that time was not a misplaced thing. That was something that, you know, just given another opportunity, another set of eyes on the field that may could deliver some throws. And, you know, that's kind of what they were looking for. It didn't pan out in the terms of points, but you know, I think at that point in the game, you know, Marcus really looked shell-shocked, and it was probably time for a move.
Yeah.
The shell-shocked seems to be like a culmination of things in the three of the last four games where him leading the offense produced a grand total of 14 points. I guess you get on that slippery slope and things kind of go for a quarterback. The loss of confidence seems to be the biggest things. What do you think snowballed it for him?
You know, it's hard to tell. I think this game was so different than the other ones that you referenced, but it's this one was just nothing was going right. Couldn't get the running game going at all. Pass protection up front was spotty at best. Marcus didn't look comfortable in the pocket. Receivers didn't look comfortable running their route. It just was a really dysfunctional game from the start of it. And the defense played their part and gave up minimal points to win. If you can give up that few points, you have an opportunity to win games.
And every week.
And they do that. You know, this is a team that is stingy, you know, allowing other teams to score points. And obviously having a great punter that puts opposing offenses in tough situations against a good defense. So, you know, the offense has got to start carrying their way. They haven't done it to this point. But we're talking about a team that was going to be a run-first team that is now struggling to run the ball. And that's a big problem now. But, you know, I think the other games you saw different things creep up, whether it was, you know, third down situations and you would have drop passes by receivers or penalties that were putting you in instead of a third and manageable distance, a third and long, which created longer routes by the receivers, which ended up in sack situations. So, you know, there were a number of things that happened in the previous games. This one was just a dysfunction by all 11 on offense.
What are the main differences between the two quarterbacks?
You know, they're very a lot of similarities more than differences. You know, you're talking about similar stature type players. You know, the 6'4", the 220 pounds, the athletic movement skills. Arm strength probably goes to Tannehill. He's got a notch above Marcus in terms of his arm strength. Marcus is probably a little bit more fleet of foot, but you know, not much. I mean, Tannehill's a very good athlete. So, you know, you're talking about similar skill sets in the way they play the game. Definitely the way they came out of college into the league. Tannehill's got good pocket. What I mean is he's strong in the pocket when things are around him. He's had some injuries as well because he does take some hits. But he's probably less apt to move out of the pocket than Marcus. But, you know, a lot of similarities, probably very few differences.
Who stands to benefit the most, you think, with Tannehill throwing? If we get like a baseline level quarterback performance out of Tannehill in this game,
I think you're probably going to see more of the outside receivers. I think Tannehill's more apt to throw outside the numbers, where, you know, Marcus in the past had been a fan of throwing in the middle of the field with a Delanie Walker and what we thought was going to be Adam Humphreys. But you're going to see a lot more outside the number throws, a little bit more of those hitches, those comeback routes by Corey Davis. I would think he would probably benefit a little bit more.
That's his best route.
And this is, that's one of his best routes, that and the deep inside dig route. Are probably his two best, but those are things that they're going to have to utilize now with Tannehill at quarterback. That's a pass that he's not afraid to make.
Did you feel like they gave Mariota every chance before they made this move?
You know, I think so. I mean,
I'm just responding to some people on social media that said that he deserved longer than 6 weeks and 2 weeks behind Taylor Lewan to keep his job.
I think it's all, when you say gave him every chance, did they give him the correct offensive system to fit his skills? No, but that's not the issue here. The issue is, did they give him an opportunity to play and try to make things happen and win ball games this year? Yeah, they did that. Right. And if you're going to be 2-4 in this situation, then, you know, and you're still not winning ball games and your defense is still playing at a level where you should be winning, then you got to make a change at some point.
Let's pick up there, because when Vrabel was brought in, part of the presser was, let's maximize Mariota. And the knock on Robiskie and Mularkey was they were not doing that. But 2016 is the season everyone references because they protected their quarterback and he had his best statistical season that year. Leading receivers, Delanie Walker and DeMarco Murray out of the backfield. They also threw to Rishard Matthews, about the same amount that they threw now to Corey Davis. But offense was different then than what we see now and who they were going through. But did they actually maximize Mariota in 2016? Were we wrong to say that he's got a higher ceiling and they actually realized that behind the scenes?
Well, they had one back in DeMarco Murray that was not only a good runner with the football in his hands, but he was also a good pass catcher. And so he was a dual threat out of the backfield, which Marcus is a dual threat. Marcus had that ability to make those short intermediate passes and also be a runner. And when you have a dual threat, a true, you know, running back that can be a runner and a receiver, it spreads the field. You can spread the field a little bit more. Delanie Walker was going to be that third down chain mover, which he was, mm-hmm. kind of that that person that Marcus relied on in those situations. The receivers back then were not outstanding on the outside. You know, just Rishard Matthews was one who had a number of catches, but he was a short route runner as well. That was where he was at his best. But Marcus was fit in that system better. They protected a little bit better up front. He got the ball out of his hands quickly. He had the outlet passes to DeMarco Murray, and he had a lot more success in that situation.
That's a really good question, though, I think. Was thinking like, hey, we'll take off from here, the wrong kind of sights, instead of thinking like, that's it.
No, this is the plateau.
Keep that going and then build on top of that. Add to the personnel within the system that was starting to be successful in 2016. Add to the personnel that can extend those drives, that can give you some more big plays, give you a vertical stretch wide receiver, someone that can actually open up the field even more to go with that short intermediate pass catcher in a Rishard Matthews and that short first down chain mover in a Delanie Walker and the receiver runner out of the backfield into DeMarco Murray. Now you draft Derrick Henry to be a replacement, which was a good replacement because you had a good number two back at that time. When he could come into the game, he was a different back.
Let me just play devil's advocate for a moment. They have Deion Lewis, who has not panned out to the way DeMarco Murray was in the passing game. But the screens have been there. Marcus has missed some of those passes to Henry and others that have just routine throws in this league. So if we want to say, well, the offense isn't the same as it was with the same weapons, and the snap count has gone down for Delanie Walker, for instance, since then. But haven't the plays been there? Is play calling the issue for Marcus Mariota right now?
Some of the plays have been there, but some of the execution, whether it's on Deion Lewis dropping balls on third down, slipping down on an opportunity. You know, the first game of the season, yeah. He drops that screen pass, it's going to go for a touchdown. Those are plays that have to be made. And one of the big things that's not being made is that extending drives to give you more offensive plays. When you're dropping third and four, when it's a third and four, and you're dropping a pass, whether it's Adam Humphries, Delanie Walker, Deion Lewis, I don't care who it is, you're not extending drives and getting three more plays. That hurts Arthur Smith. That also hurts Marcus Mariota.
But we look back at 2016, though, and say sustain that, extend that. The one thing we're not looking at is Henry was a good backup to Murray. It wasn't the greatest replacement for Murray because he lacks that dual threat thing. And once Murray breaks down and then is gone, you don't have that.
Well, yeah, exactly. He's not as good of a receiver out of the backfield as Murray was. Murray is that guy. But those are, we're talking about rare, you know, rare elite type players. Now you,
but you had that elite player. That's what helped make that offense go.
And it definitely
helped. And he's gone, and you don't have that elite player, and you don't replace him with a different elite player at whatever position.
I didn't view it like that, though. I viewed it, the talk was, don't put the handcuffs on your quarterback. Let's take the handcuffs off and open it up a little bit. When in reality, were the handcuffs off in 2016? That's what I'm getting at. Was that the way to maximize Mariota within the offense, period?
No, the handcuffs were not off then. I mean, that was still a team that was the way the offense was designed. They were going to have long drives to get downfield. You know, DeMarco Murray kind of added a player, a different kind of skill set than the team had had the previous year, that allowed him to kind of open up and do some more things. I don't think Marcus has ever had the ability to just unleash his full potential. I don't think he's had that since he's been in the league. He didn't have it with Wisenhunt, didn't have it with Malarkey, and I don't think he's had it now where he's just been able to create on his own. He is a creative type player. He has some instincts for the position and the game, and he has the athleticism to do it. That's why he's had success in two-minute situations in the past. That's why he's had opportunities when plays break down where he looks very, very much more comfortable.
How can Ryan Tannehill specifically help this Titans offense more than what Mariota was doing?
You know, I think him being able to sit back on the sidelines for the whole season and be able to watch what's happening in front of him can really be a big benefit for him. He's seeing that when you hold the ball a little too long, you're going to get sacked. He's seeing those big losses come into play and really hurt an offense and really stall drives. You know, if you're in a first and 10 and now you've been sacked, you know, now you're in a second and 15. Those are tough things to overcome in the league, especially with an offense that's sputtering around. So I think sitting on the bench, first of all, for the first six games has been a benefit, but I also think they have to change up the offense a little bit. This is time to get some of those plays that aren't working out of the game plan. You know, you look at whether it's the screens or some of the deep route concepts they've had, they try to change that up over the last few weeks where they would have an outlet receiver. I think you have to have more of that. Allow him to get the ball out quick. Get the running game going again. You're going to have to get the running game going somehow. You know, I wrote an article with PaulKarski.com that I said, you know, they have to start stretching the field vertically. They don't have those type receivers, but somebody's going to have to own up and do it. Whether it's a Corey Davis, an A.J. Brown, you know, Tajay Sharp's been the only one that's been able to really get deep. The only one they really run on vertical sets or vertical routes is Darius Jennings. And when he comes in the game, you know that's what he's going to do. But he's not, he's, you know, fourth, fifth receiver on a good team. So they're going to really have to start stretching the field a little bit more, getting players out of their comfort level and open up things. That's going to open up the running game a little bit more. If all you're running are short intermediate routes, because that's what you have, defenses are sitting on the running game and playing those passes in front of them. That's why it's hard to move the ball. And that's why the pass rush is there too, because they're really not worried about those downfield throws. You can bring an extra linebacker. You can bring an extra defensive line or bring an extra defender to rush the passer because you're not worried about those downfield throws. You don't have that vertical threat that's going to push teams away. This team that the Titans are playing this week is a great example of what they could go to. And I'm not talking about the quarterback situation. I'm talking about the players around. If you look at the two running backs they have in Melvin Gordon and Austin Ekeler, they're both dual players. They both can run the football and catch the ball in the backfield. All right, you go to the receivers. You have a Keenan Allen, who's a short to intermediate route runner, who's really good versus zone coverage.
And he that's has any great, receiver they have right now.
And he's very good. But what do they have? They have that vertical stretch Travis Benjamin,
yep,
who not only catches screens, but he also stretches the field. If you start to forget about him, Phillip Rivers will go deep on him. Okay. Then what do you have on the outside? A big X receiver in Mike Williams, who's a red zone player. What, he scored 10 touchdowns last year? You know, this is a first-round pick a couple of years ago. This is a guy they utilize in situations to move the ball in third and short in red zone situations. Well, if you start to look at the Titans' personnel, there's a lot of similarities in what they have, okay? Now, outside of the running back that can be a dual running back, which they don't have, okay, they have the tight end in Delanie Walker. You have the big X receiver, whether you call it a Corey Davis or an A.J. Brown. Those are both those type of players. Okay, but what do they lack? They lack the vertical stretch. They don't have that guy. Keenan Allen is that short intermediate guy. Now, where the Chargers have stumbled over the last few weeks, and I know we'll get into them a little bit later, their offensive line is really poor. They're missing their left tackle in Russell Okung and their Pro Bowl center in Mike Pouncey, and those are two huge losses.
Their left guard's not playing center.
Now their left guard has moved to center. They've mixed the whole line. Their right tackle, which was now the weak link, is no longer the weak link. He's still a very average to poor player. Now their left tackle's a weak link. I mean, he has struggles to block anybody. So Phillips having to get rid of the ball. Now Phillips not going to take a lot of sacks because he's a veteran player, but now he's having to get rid of the ball and throw it away.
When Vrabel got here in his introductory press conference with Joe Hutton, you quoted him yesterday. Joe Rexrod went back and looked at the stuff about Mariota. I was recalling through somebody on my Facebook page what he said about he made a joke like about the commitment to the run game. He said, "Well, we're not going to do anything silly like run into 9-man boxes." But in this game, they had a lot of stacked boxes, and it seemed like they were running. I asked him about that today, and what he said wasn't, well, we're throwing over them or we're banking people back off. He ran me through, like, their blocking scheme for it. Like, well, we've got, you know, everybody accounted for, and we've come up with ways to, you know, if we do it right, we should be able to run against it, basically. Which kind of surprised me a little bit. You're thinking on what you've seen from them mentality-wise. You're thinking on the logic of trying to run against that stuff instead of throw over.
You know, it's hard to run. It's a doing a disservice to the offensive line, first of all, because you're having to run into those 8-to-9-man boxes on a consistent basis. You know, if you look at the way and what I was talking about earlier is if you're running all short to intermediate routes because that's the players that you have and that's what their skill sets really provide – then you've got to push those defenders deep at some point. You've got to push them off the line of scrimmage. You got to push them back out of that 5 to 7 yard range where you can actually run the football. You know, I think Derrick Henry is seeing a lot of pressure in his face as soon as he takes the handoff. This isn't a Derrick Henry issue. There's just a lot of players to block. You know, some issues are coming up, like in the Denver game where there were certain individual players that were losing one-on-one battles. But you know, also they were doing a lot of movement on that defensive line too, kind of like the Colts and different teams like that. But, you know, they've got to push those defenders. You have to push those second and third level defenders off the ball so you can start to create space and run the football. And that's not what's happening right now. The screen game has not been effective for one reason or another. There are some screens that have been designed that have been there. We talked about that. But it hasn't been effective, whether it's been a poor pass or a poor catch, a slip defender, one missed block. You know, there's been some things there. I think that has to come back. You saw some success, and they haven't gone back to it, a tight end screen, a tight end short pass. You even saw Tajay Sharp beat Jalen Ramsey on a deep route, which usually can never happen from a physical standpoint. But he beat him because Jalen didn't think he would ever run a vertical route up the seam. But he did because they just haven't done it. So sometimes you're going to catch him by surprise. That's what I'm talking about, by pushing the defenders back off the line of scrimmage.
Alan Bell had this tweet. He said, Derrick Henry has had 21 rushes that have gone for negative yards. It's the most in the first 6 weeks of a season since former Chiefs running back Larry Johnson in 2007.
And a lot of that is initial penetration by the defensive line, whether, you know, a linebacker shooting the gap because they're overflowing with defenders to block, or somebody getting beat like last week, Ben Jones on one and Nate Davis on another, where defensive linemen just penetrated in the backfield and whipped them. But, you know, those aren't the norm. That's not the norm. The norm is a linebacker coming free because they're bringing seven and you got five to block.
So what do you, what's realistic to expect offensively to tweak in order to get the most out of Tannehill now?
You know, it'll be interesting
what the meetings were like behind the scenes.
You know, I think they're going to have to force some ball. And what I mean by force some balls, you're going to have to create throws to those outside receivers. Okay, A.J. Brown has been really good after the catch. Even on that ball last week where they called it back for a pass interference on the offense, which, you know, he ran after the catch. He was physical versus defenders. Let him have those opportunities. I don't care if it's a five-yard hitch. Let him have the opportunities to beat some of these small corners after the catch. Corey Davis doesn't have that run after catch ability that A.J. has shown to this point, but you have to work him on the routes that he's been really good at. So I think you're still going to see play action with Tannehill. I think you're still going to see that part of the game. I don't think they take that out. Tannehill still has that ability to escape and avoid in the pocket a pass rush or initial penetration, so he has the athletic ability to do that and create plays as they break down. But I think you're going to have to go to that run game. You're going to have to, you know, not first, but you're going to have to set up with the run game, but you're going to have to work the outside receivers more. You have to work the outside receivers. If you can do that, you can start to stretch the field at least horizontally. And then start to work in the vertical stuff.
Were you scouting South Carolina when Steve Tannehill was there?
I was, and I keep saying Steve Tannehill. I like Steve Tannehill when he came out.
We were talking about this at the press corps during the thing, how he's got some power in some people's heads for people who knew that name first.
How about I just call him
there
Ryan?
There was no I need to say it wrong now on purpose, which is hard to
Mariota.
There was no Mariota that people are defaulting to the way there was a Tannehill that people are defaulting to, at least. That's what Reed was saying earlier, and he slipped and said it. So we'll get you retrained.
All right. I'm just going to call him Ryan.
There you go. That's a safe, that's writing around it like we do when we can't find a way to spell it. Now you can always spell something, but don't know how to say something. We'll give you some grief around it, but we'll get there.
We know certain aspects of the team will be very good to great. And right now, the offense is what's been holding them back. Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. How do you expect the offense to respond to this?
You know, I think it's kind of wiping the slate clean, so to speak. You get a new quarterback in, and you can, if the receivers start catching balls and the offensive line has less sack opportunities, or giving up less sacks, you know, you can say, well, you can all, not necessarily point fingers to one person, but you can kind of say, well, the offense is running better now. So it's an opportunity to kind of alleviate a lot of problems if it works. If it doesn't, then it's really a snowball effect. And now others will start to get the finger pointed at them. Right now, Marcus has taken all the arrows, you know, and that's unfortunate because there's a lot of people that's failing the offense. And it's not just one person. But the new quarterback can come in and alleviate a lot of issues if he starts completing passes and not taking sacks.
Who takes the arrows if it doesn't work?
You know, I think you're going to look at if there's continued drop passes, who are dropping those passes? Who are not getting open? You know, that's a big issue, is getting open. Are you getting open enough to warrant the ball being thrown in your direction? You know, one of the things that Ryan does is he throws the ball into coverages a little bit more than Mariota does. So you're going to have defenses are going to have opportunities for more turnovers. And that's just what the way he's been in the league, especially when he's under duress in the pocket. He will turn his eyes away from downfield, look to the pressure that's in his face, turn his eyes back to downfield to his target, and release the ball sometimes in double coverage, like in the red zone versus Denver, which created that interception.
Paul, what's the sense you get in the locker room of how the offense has responded to the quarterback change?
You know, everybody's saying the right things. The interesting thing to me is, and I was thinking about this, and I'm curious what you both think about it. Vrabel said in the preseason, when I saw a dead offense a lot, particularly in red zone drills, and I said, who are you looking to for energy, especially with LaJuan off the first team and with Delaney not out there because of these maintenance days or injury days? Who are you looking to for energy? And he said, I'm not looking to a person for energy. I'm looking to a play We need to make a play, and the play will provide energy. But Monday, Wednesday, he installed Ryan Tannehill as the quarterback and said, I'm looking for a spark.
See, instead of plays, I'm thinking it's time to focus on players for this offense.
Well, I agree. But I'm saying 6 weeks ago, he said, I'm looking for a play.
A play.
And now he's looking at a player.
You know, right? They have to start breaking down who's going to be successful in those red zone situations you're talking about. Who's going to be successful for Tannehill? Okay, is it going to be a Delanie Walker? All right, he has had some success in the past.
He should be.
Throw
the Humphreys down there at all? I mean, I know they've not been down there much.
But, yeah, Humphreys is one, but A.J. Brown has that physicality versus smaller corners.
He did have that one touchdown where he had the very professional.
And that's what you want to see. You want to see that. Go back to it. You know, go back to those opportunities for him because he does have a good feel. One of the things that's different between Brown and Davis is the instincts for the position, okay? Brown has good feel and instincts, not only running after the catch, but in and out of his routes. Now, he doesn't have the quickness and the ability to kind of burst out of his routes like Corey does, but he has a good feel for when defenders are behind him, almost being a power forward and being able to shield defenders from the ball, using his strong frame and strong hands to come up with those throws. He is a good athlete. Throw him the ball and let him make those one-on-one opportunities. Give him those one-on-one opportunities. I would trust him more down there than I would Davis on the other side at this point. Just give him those opportunities, see if he can make them.
Chargers have placed Travis Benjamin on injured reserve.
Mm. Well, then that's a big loss. There's your vertical threat. They're going to have a hard time replacing that. Last year they had Tyrell Williams who could get deep on some passes.
And they went up top against the Titans in London.
They did. And that is a big loss for their offense. That is someone, and especially with their lack of pass protection at this point, you're going to see that Titans defense creep up toward the line of scrimmage a little bit more.
How surprised are you that Jeffrey Simmons is practicing this week?
You know, I think practice is one thing. Getting out, moving around, and just getting his feet underneath him is one thing. I think creating an opportunity where he may play is a little bit different. I mean, he needs some opportunities where there's some 320-pound guards leaning on him. And I'm talking about double teams where he's going to have to anchor down, and I'm talking about opportunities. If you are a scout, pro scout, with the Los Angeles Chargers, your first thing, if Jeffrey Simmons is active, is cut him on a consistent basis and see how he reacts to it. A lot of players react differently. Do they put their hands down and protect their knee? Do they go to the ground to protect their knee? You're going to find that right off the bat. If you're a pro scout, you're writing that in your advanced report. Offensive line coaches are looking at that as well, and that is what's going to happen. How is he going to react? I would like to see that on a Thursday practice before I see it on a Sunday to see how he's going to react in those situations. Is he protective, or is he just willing to go out there and play? You know, I remember years ago, when Kevin Dyson tore his ACL and came back, I was amazed at the way he ran his routes. He would stick that knee into the ground, stick the foot in the ground on that injured knee, and almost to a point to where he was testing it to see how hard he could go. I've never seen a guy come back from an ACL and work that knee as hard as he did. That's what you have to do, but he did that in
practice. Like we saw that with Delanie in training camp with the leg injury, yeah. The ankle injury.
I could see that because, you know, those kind of guys, they want to make it right. This is a rookie that hasn't ever played in the NFL, first of all, and he's not sure what to expect. Now, this is probably a good line to give him an opportunity against, but he's going to need to have some action in practice first.
Talked to him today a little bit about trying to calm himself down. Talk to Jarrell, who was very good on it, talking about he feels like his job now is to keep him calm, slow him down. He's wearing the dark visor face mask at practice, which makes him, they all were agreeing, look very intimidating. So they're super excited about having him out there. And that's a jolt. It's not on the side of the ball that needs the jolt, but hey, you know, the defense is talking about being even better than it is, and here's a guy that could potentially make it even better than it is. So
you just take Daquan out of the lineup. How do you? You could use all three, really.
Case was talking about, you know, the three of us will now in a rotation. He was very quick to say, like, when we said, "What's it going to be like with you and him next to each other?" And he was very quick to say, hey, Daquan's been playing well. This is going to be a three of us together.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't want Jarrell Casey not on the field unless he takes himself
off. He wasn't taking himself off. He was just making sure to include Daquan in the conversation.
You know, I think you could give him those reps that they've been giving Austin Johnson or Isaiah Mack. You know, give him those 15 plays.
Yeah.
Put him in situations where he's not taking on the run. I see him, put him in a – Daquan's not a pass rusher. He's a rundown player and been very effective. He's been one of those consistent players on the team this year. He's been very consistent versus the run. Take him out and put Jeffrey in there in pass rush situations where he's going to have a lot more one-on-one opportunities versus blocks instead of sitting there digging in the ground versus a center and a guard double team and a running back coming right at him. I would rather see him in those 15 snaps than taking on the run.
You see any chance that they stay – with three defensive linemen more, or no way in nickel?
You know, I don't see why you would. I think that's not putting your best group on the field. I think they're a little stouter when they do that, but they're not as they're definitely not as athletic and quick. They lack those for the last couple of years, lack those interior pass rushers. You know, Simmons is supposed to alleviate some of those concerns when he's 100% to be on the field with Casey instead of putting a Daquan rundown guy. Austin Johnson's a rundown defender. Those are rundown players only. And when they're on the field, they're not giving you much in the passing game.
They are short on depth at pass rusher right now. When they were prior to the injuries, but Cameron Wake hasn't practiced in 2.5 weeks. And Sharif Finch has a bum shoulder right now. What did you think of their plan last week against Denver? And Landry, who has been playing well but can't do it all on his own.
No, and, you know, I think there's not a consistent pass rush. There's not a consistent from anyone up front. When you look at the end of the day, you're looking at sacks. It's Logan Ryan. It's Wesley Woodard. You know, it's not the main sack guys that you want. Cameron Wake not being there, being injured the last 2 weeks, you know, has really been a big loss. But I think last week I thought was the week to get right. You were playing one of the worst left tackles, starting left tackles in the league in Garrett Bowles, and nobody sniffed him. And you're playing a backup right tackle last week. This week is even a better situation. You're playing legitimately two backup tackles again. Okay, the left tackle's atrocious, and the right tackle's not very good either. If you want to get healthy in your pass rush, especially with a quarterback that's going to be in one spot, he's not going to – he's going to be at 7. He's going to be at 5. It's exactly where he's going to be. This is the opportunity to get the pass rush right and start to get off the ball and get some sacks and get some pressures and hurries because, this is the week to do that. There is a makeshift offensive line like we talked about. Left guard's now moved to center. A new left guard's in the game. The right guard's solid but not special. And the tackles, I think, are just way below average.
Before we move fully into Chargers, I just wanted to touch on offensive line in Denver. This team came in with 5 sacks, and it went out with 12 sacks. And Vrabel made it sound like there was some progress on stunts and stuff. I guess he was suggesting a little bit of it or a little bit more of it was on the quarterback, perhaps. What did you think of the offensive line?
You know, I thought the stunts and the games up front was what was really giving definitely Nate Davis and Ben Jones problems. More to the right side than on the left side with Saffold and Lawan in previous games. They were having problems with the games and being on the right page with each other. You know, a couple of the sacks were given up because of those inside games. And, you know, I think that that's going to be a problem moving forward. You're going to see more teams working that angle instead of trying just to win one-on-one all the time. They're going to run those tackle-to-tackle twist, those TE stunts. Those are going to be things that you're going to see a lot. They're going to see a lot of in the upcoming weeks. And I expect the Chargers to do a lot of it as well.
Why are they struggling so much with it?
You know, a lot of it's communication. You know, you got Nate Davis who hasn't practiced and played a lot. You had Lawan who missed a lot of really important time on the field with Saffold. You know, that communication and the ability to kind of know what the other lineman is going to do in that situation is very important. And then this is still early in the process for a lot of those little pieces, whether it's Nate at right guard and Lawan at left. But the problem is the rookie in the center this past week.
Well, they were struggling with that prior to the rookie playing.
Yeah, right? And they were, but they're gonna, that was more of individual personnel issues, but this is definitely some communication and some things that they got to get worked out.
Paul's bringing up pass pro. If they can't solve that and Tannehill gets sacked at the same rate that Mariota did, who's next? Who takes the fall next up front? Is it a Saffold? Is it someone else? Like, who else is legitimately playing for their job based on play that we've seen through 6 weeks the way Marcus was?
You know, it's easy to bench a quarterback because he touches the ball on every play, and he has to deliver the pass. You know, in an offensive line situation, it's hard to blame just one player, unless it was like the Jacksonville game where Jamil Douglas just could not block the person in front of him. And then that's easy to blame. But if it's an issue with communication, that's a two-man problem. If it's an issue with getting beat one sack one time and then another player, you know, that's a whole line issue. And then it becomes a bigger problem. What are we doing up front that's not working? You know, do we have the right personnel on the field? That's first. And then second, what kind of blocking scheme do we need to go to shore up things, to make things tighter?
Correct me if I'm wrong. This is a game up front in the trenches. The Titans should dominate both sides of the line. Last year, going into this matchup, this was the smallest defensive front they had faced on the season calendar. I think maybe you could compare their defensive front to what Atlanta would do, but they're very similar in size, which means you should be able to run the football against them. And on the opposite side, from the way you describe it, from the way Cosell described it, this Chargers line is worse than the Titans' offensive line.
There's no question about it. I thought Denver was an opportunity to control both lines of the
You said that, yeah.
Too, but they didn't. But this one has to be done because the quarterback that's playing for the Chargers will pick you apart if you don't rush the passer on him. And he has the personnel to do it. The Broncos really didn't have any threats on offense. You know, Cortland Sutton's a nice player, but he's not the threat that Keenan Allen is or Mike Williams and
Hunter Henry.
Hunter Henry caught 9 balls last week. You know, those are good offensive players, and you have an elite-level quarterback, and it's been in this league a long time. He will pick you apart. So you have to dominate. Now, they're facing Bosa this year, and that's going to be a little bit different of a pass rusher that they didn't have last year. But the front is small. And you know they are without Melvin Ingram. He'll still be out for this game. But you know they are small at that defensive tackle. You know Brandon Mebane is more of a mover. He's a gap jumper. He's a slanter and a pincher. You know Jackson, the other defensive tackle, is another undersized, very similar to Mebane. They drafted Jerry Tillery in the first round. He's the big space eater that has a little bit of pass rush to him, but he's not getting near the number of snaps that those other two are. So you know you're looking at a situation where you should be able to run the ball. And you definitely should be able to protect the passer. You have one main pass rusher in Bosa, and then the other ones are very average or just average players on the pass rush level. So this is an opportunity to get everything right with Ryan at quarterback, and this is an opportunity to get the offense in gear.
Ken Wisenhunt, obviously, not the first time he's been back. But I don't know that we've talked to you about what he was. We may have run through all the coaches and what they were like to work with as a scout. But refresh us on what Wisenhunt, who was not the easiest guy to deal with for a lot of people in that building. What was he like to work with from a scouting chair upstairs?
You know, what I did like about Ken, and I'll say that first, what I did like about him is he was very adamant about what he wanted on offense. He wanted backs like he has with the Chargers. He wanted he wanted 2 to 3 backs that could do everything. The Dexter McCluster was a back that he thought that could be a runner as well as a receiver. He was a better receiver than runner. That's why Kansas City played him a receiver. But, you know, those are things that, you know, I had a little bit of differences with. There were some other differences that we had early on. And as a scout, someone that's in personnel, and especially when it gets to my game time, and my game time was January to the draft in April, you know, this is when I was – more adamant about things, about players that we're going to draft or the GM was in free agency. You know, that's when he and I had more heated conversations. During the year, that was up to him, you know, what he wanted to do as a coach. But we had some philosophical issues on some personnel that the Titans had that he didn't want to keep, or vice versa. So, you know, once those were hashed out early, we ended up having a good relationship. But I had to do that with a number of coaches. You know, there's coaches that come in with Ken's got a big ego. You come in with a big ego, and he wants to kind of, you know, establish his presence in the building. You know, it was no different than Mike Heimendinger when he came in, another guy with a big ego and wanted to establish a presence. And once we had a couple of airing out sessions, you know, we ended up working very well together. And he's one of my favorite guys to ever work with. But, and I'm talking about Heimendinger, but, you know, Ken was, he was there such a short time, but I enjoyed the time that we spent, scouting, you know, Marcus Mariota and the other quarterbacks and other players. We spent a lot of time together those years.
Hard to believe as we wrap up that Mariota, we're seeing the end of his career here.
You know, I hate to say that. I think
writing's on the wall.
I think Mariota's a good quarterback. He's going to land somewhere and he's going to be successful. I don't doubt that. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be. When you look at a skill set and you look at a highly intelligent individual, he's going to be successful. And whether it's here or somewhere else, his time may be done here. That's fine. You know, I think he's obviously still young, and you know, he's going to be a good quarterback somewhere. There's going to be a lot of quarterback openings in the next year, and there's an opportunity for him to go get one. And the thing is now the organization has to find that next guy, and that's going to be the hard part. You know, if you're going to win, I don't know, if you're middle of the pack and you're drafting middle of the pack, who's going to be that next guy? You're not going to find him in free agency. You're not going to find him by trade. And it's going to be hard to move up. You already have a lot of holes you have to fill with the unrestricted free agents that they have coming up. There's a lot of holes you have to fill in the draft anyway. How much future draft capital are you going to give up to move up to get a rookie with a team that's built to win now? Not a team that's built to win when the rookie's ready in 2 to 3 years, but a team that's built to win now. Delanie Walker's gone. Jarrell Casey's gone. We've been over this before. When the team is ready to win, the main players, now you have to replace to go with the rookie. So, you know, Derrick Henry's probably not re-signed. Those are all things that's going to be hashed out in the offseason if there's going to be a rookie quarterback manning this team.
All that said by you on Marcus, understandably, a scout's going to have a certain loyalty and faithfulness to somebody that he liked from the beginning. Unless something really
not necessarily. You know, Paul, I call it like I see it. I mean, I loved him coming out of the draft. I really liked him the first 2 years. And then we started screwing around with a guy. And, you know, it's my last sentence in the report on Marcus Mariota was, don't make changes in the offensive coordinator. Keep a steady offensive system and let the guy be in that system and grow. If you want to talk about the good quarterbacks around, look at their coordinators. Look who's calling the plays. It's been the same guys for years. Saints, Chargers, Chiefs, I don't care who it is. They Brady up in with the Patriots. It's the same system, and they're just growing into it. This guy hasn't had an opportunity to grow, and it's unfortunate.
Blake, thank you.
Thanks.
Always a pleasure.
See you Tuesday.